Welcome to Twisted Plot Podcast. Here is your host, Evelyn Marley.
I've got two kids of my own, so I completely understand.
How old are your kids?
11 and 8.
11 and 8, wow.
Yeah. So, and yours is 4?
4, yeah.
Yeah, how's that?
It's amazing. He's just beginning to understand, you know, human emotion, human interaction. So it's kind of interesting. He comes up with his own ideas about how he needs to get what he wants. So he's playing his own small games. It's kind of funny, but it's good.
How have you noticed awareness with being a father in terms of what you've learned in your self-discovery? This is not in my notes, not in my questions, but I'm just curious as a parent. You know, myself, I remember the first time my daughter said, "I hear a voice in my head," you know, and I'm not exactly sure what that means. And I'm curious if your son has gotten to that point yet.
He is, he's very perceptive. And in some ways, he kind of surprises me, actually. So one day, you know, whenever we go for hikes or walks in the woods, etc., I'm always teaching him like how to connect with nature. So I'll say, put your hand on your chest and take 3 deep breaths and say, you know, connect with nature. You know, so he knows how to do that. And one day what happened is he was in the car and we were in the traffic. And I was kind of getting a little bit annoyed with the traffic because we were late for a birthday party. So I was like, and he had to go to his friend's birthday party. So I was driving him there. And he saw me getting frustrated and he was sitting in the back and he said, Daddy, connect with nature. And he put his hand on the chest and he said, take 3 deep breaths and connect with nature. And it kind of blew my mind. I'm like, you are getting the hang of it. That's exactly it. And so
they model what they see, right?
Yeah. And so it's kind of amazing, actually, to be a father and see how my own behaviors I am sometimes unknowingly passing on to him, both the good and the bad, and seeing that in reference to what my parents have passed on to me or what my wife's parents have passed on to her. So we both kind of watch that in our kid and try to basically ensure that we are not passing down our conditioning down to him, you know, our fears down to him. So it's a constant work in progress, and it's amazing to be a father.
Beautifully said. I completely agree in terms of how I was parented and understanding, you know, I'm just starting the self-awareness journey myself. And so getting to this point of self-discovery and really understanding awareness, it's like you do go back to some of the stuff that maybe the conditioning that you said that really brought you to the space that maybe you thought that those limiting beliefs kind of prevent you from pushing you forward. Mm-hmm. And being a parent, I definitely have to pause before I speak and be very mindful of what the next step will be, because they're so impressionable and they're listening and they're paying attention to everything that we do.
Yeah. And you know, especially the things we are afraid of, they pick those up very quickly. So like one of the things I practice is, even though I may find some things, there are certain things I would be afraid of doing, I would never demonstrate that I'm afraid of them or I'm hesitant about them when I am in front of him. You know, whatever work I have to do, I will do in my own time. But in front of him, I have to appear at least in a way that I'm not creating fears for him. For instance, you know, small things like, okay, if I'm afraid of going to the dentist, I need to make sure that he doesn't pick up on that. Otherwise, he's going to be afraid of going to the dentist for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it in my friends' kids, especially one of my, you know, close friends. And his child is very afraid of various things. And I can see the direct connection of my friend's fears and the way he's passing them on to his child. And I cannot intervene because, you know, you cannot get into anyone's personal life, you know, even if they're your close friends. But it's just, it's interesting to observe how it is very real and it is very serious. You know, you never know when you're kids, teachers are going to start calling you and saying, hey, your child is acting this way or that way. And you begin to reflect and say, what am I doing in my house that is creating this behavior in my child? And so it's a very serious business to be a parent. Not easy, but it's also rewarding, very rewarding too.
I have to say, for, because we're talking about fears, there's external fears, like minor fears that I believe that I have definitely projected onto my kids. Like, this is totally irrational, but my fear of spiders. I used to be so scared of spiders. And, you know, spiders are everywhere. Why are you so scared of spiders? I've dealt with it. I've come to terms with it now. But my kids, who would have absolutely no reason to be scared of spiders, this isn't their fear. This is something that I had to deal with as a child. But for them to see me see a spider and not necessarily, like, to see me overcoming a fear, it's interesting to watch them, because they're like little cheerleaders. Like, we're not afraid, but I can see you go, you know, you can do it. You know, whether it's catch and release, I don't like to kill them. So whether it's catch and release or doing something of that sort, they're definitely adorable in that they watch me to see how is she going to approach this and overcome this. And I told them, you know, every day I'm definitely trying to overcome that fear that I have. And you can too, if you do have any. Don't be afraid to try and get to that point if and when you're ready, because it took me a little while to get there, but it's okay. And that's definitely helped them, I think, a little bit. If they start to think, I'm like, oh, remember mommy was scared of spiders? They're like, okay. So definitely being a parent is so hard, but it's rewarding.
It's rewarding. I've always been afraid of bugs. So you have company. So we went to the insectarium. I live in Philadelphia, close to Philadelphia. So we went to the city, and there's an insectarium there where they have all kinds of, you know, creepy crawlies. And they have like three boxes, and one of them has a big lizard, one of them has a tarantula, and one of them has a stick insect. And one of them has a snake. Like, what do you want to touch, you know? And the person would get these animals out, get these bugs out, and let them crawl on you or whatever. And so I said, it's time for me to face my fears. You know, my son was there. He was really scared. But I put my hand out and let that, you know, stick insect crawl on me. And it was tough, but you got to face your fears in front of them. So it's kind of amazing that, you know, you're doing the same with your kids. And we have to keep doing that. Always keep working on our fears. I have many fears. I have fears of insects. I have a phobia, actually. It's called trypanophobia. Fear of injections, medical procedures, that kind of stuff. And I've spent decades grappling with that, fainting, all that. And I'm working on it all the time, bringing myself out, pushing the limits. And so I would say, like, I'm almost out of those fears now, like almost to the point where I can go and schedule a medical procedure for myself and go get the shots and come back, drive home without having, you know, low blood pressure or whatever, and doing those things safely. So I'm getting there, but it's a journey. Whole life is a journey of learning how to face your fears. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the whole deal.
And, you know, I realized I did not even introduce you properly. This is Amit Pagdar, and he is the author of Finding Awareness, The Journey of Self-Discovery. I had to write it down because I got so nervous, but I found you on Instagram through somebody else. They had posted about you, and I immediately went to your page, and I went down, like, really down the rabbit hole of your page just to look at all of your content. And your description of awareness is so well, you embody it, basically. This is the best way I can really describe it, because when I started listening to your book, I was so happy to hear you had an audiobook, because I like to listen. It's like meditation for me. It really sinks in. I had to keep pressing the 15-second back button because I felt like I was just missing it, and I wanted to re-listen to it over and over and over again. And I've listened to quite a few books on self-development and, you know, self-awareness and self-acknowledgement. And this one in particular really struck me, and I ordered your book, like a physical copy, because I'm a coach. I'm a personal development coach. And a big part of what I do is awareness, boundaries, and communication. And I believe awareness is the hardest part for me to really, it's at the top of the pyramid, right? We're trying to preserve our energy. This is what I coach. And awareness is at the top of the pyramid for me in terms of explaining where people need to get to start, a starting point. And when I read your book, I was like, this is it, everybody. You know, this is what I'm going to recommend to my clients if they ask me, because truly, I just am so enamored with the way that you're able to describe it in such a clear, concise manner. How did you get into the journey of awareness for yourself? What brought you to really go explore that path?
So I think it all began quite a while ago, as I say in my book, when, you know, I was studying for these exams, like 10th grade back in India, a lot of pressure, social pressure, parental pressure. And I was struggling with my studies. I wasn't a good student. I was distracted all the time. The consistent complaint from my school was, he's very talkative. He's always talking to his friends. He's looking outside the window. He's not focused at all. So I was one of those kids. So, you know, parents scheduled an intervention and they called my uncle, and he was a very smart guy. He had a lot of degrees, had his own business, you know, very heavy personality. And he questioned me, he put me on the spot, and he made me reflect and ask myself seriously who I am, who I was without any influence of the people I surrounded myself with. Who am I without my friends, without the songs they listened to, the games we played, the internal jokes, all of that, you know, what their dreams were and what they wanted to do and which college they wanted to go. If I had no input from my friends and no input from anybody else in my family, who I really was, and I found no answer. Yeah, it was kind of a strange moment where you look at yourself and you realize you have no idea who you are. You know, it's just every time you speak in somebody else's voice. Every time you think someone else's thoughts and what society has taught you to believe is right or wrong. And so that's kind of when it all began. I was 15 years old, 16 years old. Fast forward a few years, you know, relationships happen and life happens and you fall flat on your face. You know, you get fired from your job. You realize you've been ignoring your health. You get hospitalized. And sometimes all these things happen at the same time. So something similar happened to me. I was in a serious, intense relationship, did not work out. Job did not work out. Was bullied by people at work all the time. Health, not good. I lost 26 pounds in like a week. That's how bad my health got at one point.
Wow.
And so it was kind of a serious place I was in where not just emotionally, like physically, I had no idea what I was doing. And so then things became quite serious. And then I said, okay, now it's time for me to understand what is really going on with me. And then I started reading books, started studying it, started meditating, found myself, you know, I was in a cafe one day and somebody interrupted me and said, are you okay, sir? And I said, yes, I'm okay. What's the matter? You know, what happened? He said, you've been sitting here with this book for about 7 hours. You haven't moved. And I was just there. I was just in a state of meditation. I wasn't asleep, nothing. I was just there. And so this used to happen to me, spend hours and hours meditating and really going deep, as you said, down the rabbit hole, understanding myself, turning the mind inside out fully, exposing everything, holding nothing back, touching the most vulnerable aspects of who I was first, you know, challenging myself, pushing myself, expanding the limits. And out of all that, the passion was born to talk to people, to understand how to communicate, how to connect with people. As a result of all the conversations I had, private one-on-one conversations, this book came out of that. You know, it was a work of, you know, a result of that. And then the Instagram was going on. And so here I am, you know, just connecting with more people and spreading the love.
We're so glad you are, because it's truly a joy to read your interpretation of self-awareness and through all the studying you've done. First of all, I want to know, what book was that you were reading for 7 hours straight? I'm curious. Do you remember which one it was?
I don't remember the book, but it was one of the major figures, I would say, who influenced the way I think early on was Jay Krishnamurti. So if anyone wants a recommendation, I would suggest read his book called The Awakening of Intelligence by G. Krishnamurti. It's a wonderful book. He has written more than 50 books. So you can pick any one of them and they are pretty much all the same. The message is the same, pretty consistent. So yeah, I think it might have been one of his books because his work used to send me on these journeys of self-reflection. Like I would begin to meditate just spontaneously. Him, Eckhart Tolle's books, 14 years ago. So his first book had come out back then. So Alan Watts, you know, these are like the influential authors who I started reading. But then eventually I'd let all of them go and you'd be on your own path. So
absolutely. And you definitely are. When I say embodied, and I've heard you say it on before, like the embodiment of understanding the self-awareness, it's definitely something that I see in you and I truly admire. And I don't know if and when I will completely understand if I'm at that state, but I definitely feel as if I understand. And I was walking around my house going, yes, exactly. You know, saying all these things out loud as I'm listening to you talk. And it was just, it felt freeing somehow to feel validated in a lot of the stuff that I've been reading and listening to. And it was an acknowledgement of, I feel like I understand it now. I feel like I really, really understand what's happening. And that felt really
empowering,
fulfilling feeling. I don't know how to explain it, but
yeah.
So how would you explain then the simple, you know, who are we? What is awareness? How would you explain that to someone listening right now who is like, what are they talking about? Awareness.
So basically, self-awareness is broken into two words, simply put. There's the self and there is the awareness of that self. So what we call the self is me, my memories, my emotions, my life experiences, my dreams, my desires, my fears, my anxieties, my passions, my hobbies, my relationships, my breakups, all of that. Everything is me, okay? And now I have to bring an awareness to that, which means there is something which is going to watch all of that I am. Now the question becomes, who is going to watch who you are? In my mind, there's no two people. It's very simple. We are individuals. I mean, there is no two Amits in my mind. So fundamentally, it is me who is going to watch me, which is my ego is becoming self-aware. The ego begins to watch itself. Okay. I really stray away from concepts such as, you know, what have you, Atman, Brahman, is supreme intelligence, you know, the higher self, consciousness, watching it. I stay away from all those things because those concepts require for you, the listener, to trust me. And I don't want your trust. I actually want your doubt. I want listeners to doubt everything that I say. And so we have to start with very simple language, which is approachable, speakable to a layman. If you pick somebody off the street and tell them, they should be able to understand what you're saying. And so it's my ego, which is my identification with my whole past, because I refer to myself, my fears, my emotions, my memories. So it's my identification with all these things. That is the ego. That ego begins to observe itself. A simple example I would give is, you know, let's say you're having lunch with your best friend, okay? And you're having a lunch in a restaurant and you're eating and your best friend says, hey, Amit, dude, you're making a lot of noises, chomping noises while you eat. And I say, whoa, I hadn't noticed that. That's interesting. You know, okay, thanks for letting me know. And all of a sudden, my mind becomes aware of a certain unconscious behavior. And that behavior, every single time I do that behavior, whether I'm at home or in public, my mind says, hey, watch out for it. And pretty soon, sometimes instantaneously, that behavior drops away. It's actually from a personal experience. It happened to me. That behavior dropped away. I used to do that many years ago. But it's a very good example of how when our unconscious behaviors are made conscious, by a simple act of awareness. We can no longer continue them. That's the most important thing. So if I become fully conscious, fully aware of why I'm afraid of a certain thing, that fear drops away. If I'm fully aware, fully understand why I'm really angry at another person, the anger drops away. And you can replace that with any emotion, any negative emotion. And everything that is exposed to this flame of awareness, this torchlight, you know, this light of awareness, everything transforms because there are unconscious behaviors beneath the layers of everything we do. And all these unconscious behaviors become conscious. And when they become conscious, our life begins to simplify. Our professional relationships improve. Our personal relationships improve. Our relationship with ourselves is completely different. Everything begins to change. I begin to understand what I want to really do in my life. My purpose reveals itself. That's the ultimate outcome. My intuition begins to speak. My subconscious mind is now fully aligned with who I am. There is no distance between who I am and who I want to be. So at any given moment, I fully am whoever I want to be. So you see, all my energies are released. Internal conflict, as you had said, mentioned before, saving energy. All my energy is saved completely. So any given moment, I meet life fully. I meet my challenges totally, holding nothing back, having no fear in any of my interaction. So that's how the ego unravels itself. And it walks down a path where it goes from being unconscious to becoming fully conscious and fully integrated. Sometime, you know, we can talk about that later. But
yeah, no, I mean, the one thing I hear people in the world of conscious thinking, let's say, is the idea of ego death. And I'm curious your opinion on it, because at first, when I was reading these books, it was like, ego is the enemy, ego death. But as I've gone farther down this path, I've really started listening differently. And I hear more things like, ego is a part of you, no matter what. You have to just see it for what it is and recognize that it's in you. It's there. Hello, ego. And then work with what you've got in the best way that I can describe it, of what you have in that space of what the ego is. And so are we trying to kill the ego, or are we just trying to live with our ego that it's going to be there anyways?
Neither, actually.
Ooh.
Because if I try to kill my ego, as we said, who is aware of the ego? The ego itself. And so when the ego tries to kill the ego, it has an agenda behind it. And every agenda only makes the ego stronger. So it's kind of like a snake trying to eat its own tail. You know, it's not going to happen. So we have to understand that we are not trying to kill the ego, because there is no such thing as killing the ego. It's the ego talking, doing the talking. All these stories are the part of the ego. The ego is actually the teacher. Okay. And as every good teacher, it's not going to give you clear instructions. It is going to invite you to become more curious. And the ego is asking us to become more curious. How does it do it? By giving us more suffering. Mm. The stronger the ego, the more suffering there is in our life. And the more suffering there is, the more curious we become. Why am I suffering? And we begin to contemplate, observe our behaviors, say, okay, why did I speak this way to my partner? Why did we get into this argument? Why did I have this fight? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the ego makes you more curious. It says, look at me. I want something to teach you. I have a lot to teach you if you're interested in observing and learning. And it is saying that to the ego itself. So the ego, as it learns about itself, begins to unravel, which means it can no longer carry out certain behaviors once those behaviors are revealed. If I understand that my arguments with my partner are because of certain misunderstandings, you know, he says something, she says something. Once I understand the place they are saying it from, once I understand that I am misinterpreting it because of my insecurities, et cetera, for whatever reason, I no longer have the same kind of interaction with them in that context. Now, what has happened is I no longer get angry. So my behavior has changed. Okay. So the ego is still there, but a part of the ego has stopped fighting itself. And so as you go through this evolution of learning more and more and more about yourself, you find yourself becoming an emptier person, a lighter person. The mind becomes easy. The life becomes easy. There is no space. There is a lot of space in the mind. There is no energy waste in fighting oneself. There is no inner resistance. And so the ego goes through this phase of being divided, being in a state of conflict, to understanding itself and resolving those internal conflicts. And as it becomes resolved, it becomes integrated, which is I become an individual. I become somebody who has no internal conflict or very little internal conflict. I'm not confused about who I am, about what I want, about what I am about. Clarity. So ego integration is nothing different than complete clarity inside, emotional security. See, once the ego is integrated, its behavior is now in the world different. It appears for an outside, to an outsider, that whatever this person does is not really selfish, is not really egoic, is not really coming from a place of having a self-serving agenda to it, which is the behavior becomes egoless. So as the ego becomes integrated, it becomes one solid whole, and then it slowly begins to dissolve, because whatever rudimentary purpose it has, it will fulfill. I have a name. I need to use my name to write a book, for instance, et cetera, et cetera. And as an organizing agent of your life, it will keep organizing your life. You have a social security card, et cetera, et cetera. But it is very rudimentary. The function remains very rudimentary. You have to get through society, because everybody in a society has an ego. And so you cannot go out there and say, I have zero self-interest. It just doesn't work. So apart from that very rudimentary functioning, there is no real egoic behavior left.
Mm.
So that's the journey of transformation the ego goes through. And that doesn't mean, just to add, that doesn't mean you won't have dreams, desires, and things you want to do in the world. In fact, you will become even more clearer about what you want to do in the world. And you will start doing those things for the right reasons, not for recognition, fame, approval, money, all of that.
Right, for purposeful living.
Purposeful living, yes.
Well, when you were describing the ego and with an argument with your partner, I mean, countless times, right? Like I can think of some times where before I did any work, my ego definitely was like, pay attention. And I just kept ignoring it and let the patterns continue. And after doing a bunch of work, I felt like I was more aware. However, there are many times where I feel like the ego, like you said, is just like, oh, there's a lesson here. And I can honestly say this weekend, you know, this happened and I somehow brought myself into the awareness and I just started crying and I was so upset. And I had to turn to my partner and say, this isn't even about you. This is all me. This is my stuff. I'm triggered. This has nothing to do with you. This is all coming from me. And I am so sorry. And I really just had to acknowledge what was happening inside myself. And once I did, it was like a huge weight lifted off of me, because I recognized that those things that I perceived and heard and were taken in, it was just completely different from anything that was happening in the moment. I was just being screamed at by my ego. And once I was like, okay, got to go back, got to get back to work, right? Got to see what's going on there. And over the past few days, I've really been exploring that and recognizing more about myself, which just feels like it's almost like a new download of a software into my brain. So I know when it happens next time, I can go back to that part and be like, oh, we have this software already. We know what to do in this situation. We've heard this before. We've recognized this part. Let's move on. So yeah, you really just hit the nail on the head with that one there for me.
Yeah, you're describing insight, which is really a flash of understanding. And when we have that flash of understanding, oh, this is what's going on in me. You know, this is how I'm seeing things. I'm not really angry at them, but I'm really angry at myself for not being able to respond to the challenge they are creating. in front of me. So this anger is not directed at anybody else, it's directed at me. And when I see it this way, it's the anger dissolves, you know.
Immediately.
So immediately. It's like, oh, that's quite silly, you know.
Yeah.
So that lifting of the burden is a very good indicator that I am on the right path, because the burden lifts, the feeling that the weight has lifted from my shoulders, that feeling happens only when an internal conflict is resolved at the subconscious level. As long as there is a subconscious conflict, we keep feeling drained, we keep feeling tired, exhausted with these problems that keep coming up over and over again. But once there is an insight, we feel lighter.
So much lighter. And I was tired. I was really tired. I had put, it was a short amount of time of this thing happening, but it was like all the waves of emotion that happened. And then it was like light bulb went on and I was like, oh, wait, stop. We can all calm down now. We've got it. And after that, I was like, whew, it feels like I ran a marathon and it all happened so fast. But once it did and I relaxed back into my body. I was there again. I was present. I was more aware of everything. And I truly had to acknowledge, you know, what it was for what it is. And if I felt that lightness, but thank you very much for saying that, because I, even listening to you say it back, I was like, oh, I had one of those moments. Maybe somebody else can recognize this for themselves too, if they're listening, because yeah, it was perfectly said. What about boundaries? What do you think of boundaries?
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
I only asked because I was doing all this work with boundaries and I'm like, yes, set boundaries. And then I heard someone say, when you set boundaries, you're not living a full life. And I said, wait. All I do is talk about boundaries. Isn't it more freeing when you can have boundaries that you truly believe will help you and not go against what you think you're supposed to be doing, but when you actually want to do and fulfill yourself. So what are your thoughts on boundaries?
Okay, let's get into it. So my view on boundaries is that they are essential, okay, in the beginning. What I mean by that is, you know, I had this strange relationship with a close buddy of mine, 20 years, you know, friends for 20 years, et cetera. But he always had a personality which kind of was a little bit dominating, you know, always, this is my way, this is how we are going to do things. And I was always insecure, not knowing who I was, et cetera, for many years. And so I just used to go along. And so there was a boundary which was violated every single day for many, many years. And when I saw that, I remember, for me to come out of that phase of my life where I'm constantly being trodden upon, et cetera, for me to recede into a shell and heal was essential. It's kind of like saying, okay, I'm checking out of here. I'm going on a retreat, emotionally speaking, and I'm not going to maintain any contact. I'm going to withdraw because there are certain things which I don't know how to, you know, prevent from happening in our interactions. And so I had to create a strong boundary, okay? I had to stop him from saying certain things, to, you know, repeating certain behaviors in that friendship dynamic, and take a while to heal. And that healing period lasted 4 or 5 years, not sure how long, but lasted a long time. But once that healing period was over, the fundamental proof that the healing is over is that I come out of that shell with a strong center, which means I have gone beyond those levels, those insecurities. I have gone beyond those fears. I understand myself at a level where I feel empowered with who I am, not afraid of what I want to say, what I believe in, because everything is examined, everything is understood. Now that I am in this new way of being, I have no reason to stay behind the boundary. I have complete freedom to mingle. Now, if we feel that, okay, I'm not yet ready, then you're not yet ready. Then even in daily interactions, you have to say to people that, okay, this is something I don't want to discuss, et cetera, et cetera. Practice strong boundaries in, you know, every single area. Yes. But we have to be mindful that this is a temporary phase. It's a necessary and a temporary phase, at least from my standpoint. Because if I have a strong center, then I don't need strong boundaries. controversial. Okay, that's my view. It's the visual aid to understand that is, imagine drawing a circle on a piece of paper. Okay, if you draw a circle, that circle creates a boundary, and at the center of the circle is me, is my ego, etc. And the boundary is essentially protecting the circle, protecting the center. Now, let's imagine this circle is actually like the sun shining brightly. The center is glowing, spreading something outwards. Not taking anything, but spreading things outwards. There is no boundary necessary then. See? So when there is this deep feeling of being centered, being secure, being emotionally completely self-reliant, not having pent-up anger, not having guilt, not having resentment, not having this feeling of retribution, blame, expecting something from somebody. None of it. Totally self-fulfilled without being egoic at the same time. From that state, I can interact with anybody at the deepest levels. And so you will find yourself having these interactions with the same people who would violate your boundaries. Interactions which bring your power back to you. Which means you say the things which you have always wanted to say to them. You say those things the way you have wanted to say to them without hurting them, simultaneously raising your own power without diminishing theirs and creating that balance which was lacking in the relationship. And if they are not ready to have that new dynamic in place, it will reveal itself. Guess what? You are not dependent on them accepting you the way you are. But now you are not necessarily pushing them away or worried about somebody overstepping your boundary or stepping on your toes. You are free. You are fearless. And you live life without boundaries. So that's my view.
Wow. I get it. I mean, I completely... And that compassionate communication part of it, where you are able to actively live in that space of your self-fulfillment and explain to someone how you're feeling without the expectation of how they will take it, because you really have no idea and you have to be free of that in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You do not develop the internal strength if you're not free of their expectation, if you're not free of how they see you, how they perceive you and all of that. Because that's in the book a little bit. Because there is self-projection, there is self-image, and then there's a true self. We have to merge all these three different aspects of me. How others perceive me, that's my self-projection. Who I think I am, that's my self-image. And who I actually am, that's my true self. All of them combine, and then you become a whole human being, an integrated human being. In that way of living, there is hardly any fear. And so you go through life the way you want to live life. And it's just the fact that your presence is there in any given interaction. It's like a welcoming door. It's an open arms to those who mean you no harm. And it's kind of a strong repellent to those who want to harm you. So you don't have to actively practice boundaries, but you have this natural protective layer around you, which is just, you just carry because you're completely present in any given interaction and you meet that interaction on its merits, which means I'm present. And even if you hurt me yesterday, I give you the benefit of doubt that you may be in a different state of mind today. And so I meet you in a new place, every single person, every single time. Every interaction remains new, fresh, alive, dynamic. And so there's no preparation. I'm not preparing to protect myself, to defend myself, to be a certain way. I am just who I am. So I go through life without preparation, which is without fear. And everything just seamlessly, effortlessly keeps falling into place.
Incredible. I could listen to you talk for hours. I just about all of this because it is so, I mean, please, everybody, you can buy the book on, we're not done yet, but you can buy the book on Amazon.com. That's where I got it. And then also you can find the audiobook, which is just a beautiful thing to listen to. So thank you very much for talking about boundaries because I was curious about that, your opinion on that. Can you explain a little bit, because I overheard as if I was like listening to your conversation. I heard you on a podcast talking about how there's no such thing as a goal.
Interesting. I could have said that possible. So the interesting thing about goals is the way we interpret achieving goals is, okay, I have a certain goal and I am going to achieve my goals. And we hear that all the time thrown around, especially if the goal is something worthy, not a simple goal, you know, but it's serious, it's difficult. It's it kind of, you know, gets your heart beating, gets you excited. Such goals, big accomplishments in your life, you'd never accomplish them, because you don't accomplish a goal, you accomplish a process. And the process that you accomplished is going to accomplish the goal. It's not up to you to accomplish your goal. And this is, I think, a fundamental disconnect in the way we see our reality is we are always focused on the end result, which means if I have a goal in my mind, I want to, you know, start my own business, write my own book, et cetera, et cetera. This vision of a successful book or a successful business or what have you keeps coming up in my mind. And I keep getting more and more obsessed with it, more and more attached to it. The more attached I become to the end goal, the more fear I develop that I will not reach it. And that fear keeps tripping me up. I experience something called as procrastination. I experience something called as lethargy. You know, I experience something called as self-sabotage. I start going towards a certain goal and I then throw it all away, or I never develop it. I cannot tell you how many people I've spoken to who say, I start something good, I know it's good, and I just throw it away. I don't know why. And I do this over and over again. We do it because we are obsessed with the goal. And that goal is, that obsession with the goal is in conflict with the way we see ourselves. See? So there's my self-image is that of a person who doesn't deserve to be successful. And as I keep visualizing myself being successful, I keep creating that internal conflict, which we spoke about before. So that internal conflict drains my energy and makes me tired. All of this, including the fear of failing, can be gently put aside. You can sidestep all of this. How? By understanding that the intricacies of your process are all that matter, which is, if I want to write a book, for instance, I get up at a certain time every single day. I sit down in front of my laptop or book or whatever, and I start scribbling, start writing. I get myself in a certain frame of mind. If I had to listen to a certain kind of music, I do that. If I need to exercise before, I do that. If I need to have breakfast before, I do that. But all of this is part of my process. Then I write for 3 hours, then I go for a walk, then I have lunch, etc. Then I come back and then I write again. And I repeat doing this every single day. And so what I start doing is I start becoming obsessed with the process and I start enjoying the process every single day, which is whatever activities I am undertaking in order to make this happen. My focus is only on those. If I'm writing a book, I don't focus on me having a successful book. I focus on my vision of what my book feels like to me. See, completely internal is what do I put in it? How do I communicate that? And what is the feeling it leaves me with in the end? And am I building towards that feeling? See, it's a very different way of thinking, saying, very different than saying, I want to sell 10,000 copies in a year or something. You know, that's depressing. To me, that is depressing. That's obsession with the end goal. For me to say, this is the kind of book I want to write, that is your alignment with your process, because it has got nothing to do with somebody reading the book and praising you, appreciating you, you're getting good reviews. It's got nothing to do with that. But what it has got to do with, are you willing, are you able to and willing to fulfill your own vision about your own work? So if I want to create a successful business, what feeling am I trying to create through this business? What do I feel when I see myself running this business? And am I moving towards that feeling? It's a much more liberating way of thinking about it than thinking about an end goal. So that's why I might have said there's no such thing as a goal. Mm-hmm. What is there is a process. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a small but interesting example. Everyone has heard of Mike Tyson. I'm a big fan of Mike Tyson.
Nice.
Regardless of, you know, what he did and his history, et cetera, painful history, the kind of person. But he's a very interesting character. And I don't want to talk about him, but more about his teacher, Customaro, his coach, was the reason why Tyson became like the heavyweight champion at 19 years of age. You know, not interested in boxing that much, but it's an achievement, significant, massive achievement at 19 years. How did that happen? And I was watching an old video in which, this is way before Tyson actually became the world champion, in which Customaro, his teacher, he's basically just casually predicting that he is going to become the next world champion. And this is different than, okay, you know, I support my guy and bragging about it, et cetera, you know, creating a fake personality. This was different than that. This was different. This was not promotion. This was a real expression of the understanding of process. What he said was that, I know Mike is going to become the next world champion, or someday he's going to become world champion, because he has a grit, he has a determination, he has a belief that he's going to win, and he has the ability to perform, to give what it takes to become a world champion. And when you have a combination of these things, success is but a foregone conclusion. Very important. I that hit me. That was profound when I first understood that success is a foregone conclusion if you've got your process down. If you don't have your process down, you can obsess with your goal for years and years and years, and you're not going to get anywhere. And even if you do, it's going to be after breaking something else in the process, you know, like making big sacrifices, family-wise, this, that, et cetera, et cetera. You don't want to do any of those things. So build that process. Very important. Take time to understand what works. And that's the only way you're going to enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
If I care about the book, I will not enjoy what I'm doing.
Right. And then what's the point at that stage? Right.
What's the point?
Wow.
What's the point? Yeah.
Purposeful. Again, back to purpose and purposeful living. For you, for the book, then you really were called to write the book because you felt it embodied part of your purpose in explaining this to others.
The reason why I wrote the book was I wanted to create a way of organic thinking about these things, because I didn't want to start with assumptions. I don't start with any concept in the book which a layperson wouldn't know. I don't use any fancy words ever. And I wanted to show how you can go quite deep without any of the widely accepted concepts of enlightenment, awakening, higher self, ego death, all of those things. Without going into any of those areas, how you can just think very, very simply and build on those ideas. So the book actually is 30 chapters. You know, it builds on the previous chapter. It's an inquiry. It's a meditation. And so through the book, I'm trying to describe a way of approaching life which can empower anybody who reads it, really. You don't have to have interest in spirituality, and you'd still, I think, find that there's a distinct way you can ask questions to yourself and build mental models. There are limitations. Sometimes you need science, but even without science, you can go quite far.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you do this wonderful thing at the end of the book, because, you know, throughout the book, as I was listening, and then when I went back to reading, you do this wonderful thing at the end of the book. You have questions and answers. And for me, as someone who interviews people, it's like a golden nugget of extra book in a book, because I do have all these extra questions, but you have them so beautifully laid out in the book, and listening to the questions being answered after reading it, it was as if anybody in the world would be reading something or have questions for you, you thought of the answer to explain in such a clear and concise manner. Everyone should go get this book just so they could understand themselves just even a fraction more of what's happening. Because, and then if you're reading it and you have a question, just go to the back of the book, because I'm sure that you do have the answer back there. So thank you for that. Oh, I could talk to you probably for hours, and I want to make sure we're not going over time, but I wanted to ask you, I told you already in the outline that I would be asking you twisted plot. I believe that life has many, many plot twists. And as we grow up, we handle them depending on where we are in our stage of life. And I'm curious for you to tell me, you know, some tools to help myself and the listeners for any of those life plot twists. How can self-awareness and this journey really help us? Just a few small things that you can enlighten us with just to help us get through some of these times.
If I were to say one thing and say it quite directly, I would say, give up all the fighting instantly. Surrender. And you can do it. You can do it right now. And to understand the state of surrender is quite a difficult thing to describe, because the instant I use the word surrender, people think that I'm asking them to give up. I'm not asking them to give up. I'm asking them to give in. And when you give in, you begin to move with the problem. When I surrender to my fear, I move with my fear, move with the energy of fear. What that means is I'm no longer in conflict with fear. And when I'm no longer in conflict with fear, I save a ton of energy. So no matter how difficult the current life situation is, see if you can go with it for a few minutes. Not a whole lot, just the next couple of minutes. Just go with whatever is happening. And you will begin to feel lighter. You'll begin to feel more relaxed. You'll begin to feel as if you don't have to do anything, because you don't. And when you understand that state of being where I don't have to do anything, no matter how twisted the current problem is, no matter how shocking the revelation is that life has in front of me, if I instantly switch from fighting, from tensing up, and I begin to flow, relax my body, breathe, relax my mind, and start moving with the problem, I begin to have ideas. Intuition speaks up. I discover an alternative way of thinking, which is devoid of struggle, devoid of resistance, devoid of confusion, devoid of analysis. I just feel what I need to do. And this is something we have to try with small things first, gradually building it up so that you can kind of build the muscle of intuition. But if I start living this way, then I realize that when trying hard isn't working, I always have the option of trying easy. You know, we have this feeling of pushing against the problem, you know, hitting our head against the wall, pushing against the wall. We love doing that because we feel as if I'm doing something. But instead, learn to flow like water. You know, when there's an obstruction, the water in the stream just goes around. It may form a puddle, but then it finds a way to flow. And so we have to learn how to flow gently, effortlessly, and keep flowing without getting locked up, without getting tensed. Keep flowing with the problem. And if you keep doing that, no problem is too large to overcome. Not from personal experience, but from reading books and reading experiences of other people. Another good book to read is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. This is a guy who was in the concentration camps in Auschwitz, lost his family, and how he converted his pain, his suffering, into his purpose. How his approach was everything. His attitude towards life was everything. And so there are people who have faced even death, and they go smilingly into death, in their own death. See? And we have to bring that up because it shows how pliable the human mind is, how potent it is, what capacities it has. So if even in the face of death and in the face of complete loss of human dignity, I can still find my way out, my mind has it in it to find a way out, then what are my current problems in comparison? Then whatever I'm going through right now surely can be approached through this way of surrender, this way of flowing with it, becoming one with it, and try it and see what happens. Because only through experience, you can learn.
That was so beautifully said. I've definitely been on the path of surrender and understanding that. So the fact that you brought it up naturally, it just is divine. I love it. Thank you so much. Where can everyone find you? I was able to contact you through Instagram, but you do have an email address, and I'm not sure if you have a website as well.
Yes, I do have a website, findingawareness.com. Instagram, same handle, @findingawareness. And you can reach out to me any way you want. I also do, not doing it for December because I'm going on a long vacation nice. With my family. And I'll be back in January. And every month I do private sessions, one-on-one sessions, which I just love doing. And I do webinars. So you can sign up for one of those. They are donation only. And all of this will start back up in January. But you can follow the Instagram page and that would be great. Send a message, say hi. I always respond to all my messages.
You're amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for giving us your wisdom with this. Please, please check out the book. It's Finding Awareness, The Journey of Self-Discovery. And thank you again, Amit, for coming on and talking. I really enjoyed every minute.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it too. Thank you so much for inviting me. And giving me this opportunity. I deeply enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. Tune in next time, and remember, stay twisted.